Yo, 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 what's good? What's good, everybody? Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Welcome back. We are here. We're full in effect. We're fresh, recharged. I took a trip. Just come back from my trip. Texas was a pretty good experience, whatever, and so forth. Had a really good time. But let's get into it. Let's get into it. Today's episode. I know you guys, we did a little bit of free agency breakdown where I kind of talked about some of the biggest moves after day one of free agency. Obviously, a lot has transpired. A lot of new faces and new places. And the big time notable signings are pretty much done. There's still some really good players in the market, like a Justin Simmons, a Mike Williams, who have yet to find homes, right? But I'm, in destinations and so forth. But I'm sure more of that will kind of unfold and, undo itself over this week, right? So now it's kind of like we're all centering into the NFL draft. But boy, it is a lot going on. I love this time of year in sports. Obviously, we have college basketball, the NCAA tournament, March Madness. I'm sure everybody's going to be dialed in and tuned in to that for the next couple of weeks and so forth on the men's and women's side. The men's obviously always draw big attention, big time exposure. But the women, I also think they're going to draw a lot of attention as well. I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on the women's tournament, especially as, those familiar faces, the familiar teams, as they go deeper. I think it'll be really great. I think people are really going to grab onto it and gravitate to it. So I'm going to be dialed in. I'm excited for this time. I'm always excited for this time of the year. Everybody's going to do their bracket and so forth. But first and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah K of the Isaiah K Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Shouts out to everyone that is going to hear this podcast. Greatly appreciate all the comments, the questions that you guys leave or that you guys have been leaving over the past several episodes. I will be sure to tap in and answer those questions. I'm dedicated to doing that. So I got you guys. But this weekend, we had a big time trade go down. And the trade went down as I was just returning home from Texas. And the Bears finally traded Justin Fields to the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? That was probably the biggest transaction that happened. And the first with Pittsburgh, they've completely revamped their quarterback room, right? And in previous episodes, I've kind of dove into I dove into the reasons as to why Pittsburgh probably felt uncomfortable running it back with Kenny Pickett. And then the Bears, the cats kind of out of the bag. They're going to draft Caleb Williams more than likely with the number one pick. Now, from fans to even certain media members, they were like, some people were surprised when they saw Justin Fields only got traded and it only took a 6th-round pick for the Steelers to acquire him. And I don't know, maybe there was, I guess there was this seamlessly belief, this thought that the Bears would be able to get like a 2nd or 3rd or 4th-round pick even for Justin Fields. I guess that was the thought. But the moment Mac Jones got traded for a 6th-round pick, people should have known the Justin Fields market would look quite similar. And given the moves obviously Seattle, they traded for Sam Howell for much higher compensation. The Raiders signed Gardner Minshew. The Vikings, they went after Sam Darnold and got him. Well, the sixth rounder, that's not surprising. And the reason why Mac Jones and Justin Fields was both traded for a 6th-round pick, it's because the contracts. Their contracts are really, they're the same. They're in the same draft. They were drafted in the first round. And neither guy is going to get their fifth year option picked up by their new team. So essentially, they're on 1 year deals. So when people like Sam Howell, he went more than Justin Fields. Yeah, that's because first Seattle liked Sam Howell. You know, they scouted him. They liked him coming out of the draft. And then also Sam Howell, he's on the books for 2 years. He's on the book for 2 years, right? So it's a lot different. So when people try to compare and nip and tuck and like this player went for this and this player went for that, contracts, huge, in especially in this particular trade, the contract situation had a lot to do with him going for a sixth rounder. The same thing for Mac Jones, right? The same thing. They're essentially on 1 year deals. And as I told you guys about the Steelers, they made it clear that they were not comfortable with their quarterback situation. I don't care what they told us or what they tried to tell us, but it was obvious. They were trying to move. They were trying to pivot and move off of Kenny Pickett. And as I told you guys over the last couple episodes, it's just more of a reflection on the Steelers quarterback situation from last year. And they knew they could not just roll into the season with Pickett and Mason Rudolph again. They knew that was just not an option. So to get Russ, let's be honest. You look at his numbers from last year, they weren't bad. But just by the eye test, he's just not the same. So they're hoping to catch lightning in a bottle. But with Justin Fields, it's pretty easy to take this risk, this flyer on him, because Fields possesses some physical traits that are really eye-popping, right? The physical traits that are really eye-popping. He has tools, and in certain ways, him and Russell kind of play really similar, like, you know, ad-libbers, playmakers, you know, they extend plays and so forth. Not really, you know, one read kind of guys, right? But obviously, he has his struggles within the pocket, and it's glaring. Now, I understand the move, and I totally get what the Steelers are doing here, right? They're hoping, you know, maybe sit Justin for a year. The following year, maybe he's ready to go after some tutelage and learning from Russell Wilson. I'm assuming that's the hope. And so I understand this move. Now, does this move make them better today? No, I would say no. They still hover around a 9-10 win team. And perhaps their ceiling is higher, but this could not work also, right? Like, this could not work, right? You know, with Justin Fields, as I said, his skill set, it's really eye-popping. It's what a lot of scouts look for. And I know there's some people out there that's like, man, Justin Fields at Ohio State, he just looked a little different, and he looked like he was going to pan out and so forth. And yes, and, for all of the so-called quarterback whisperers or quarterback evaluators, I think we've all become so enamored with the traits. Oh, this guy has certain traits. This guy has these traits, right? You know, and it's all over the place with quarterback scouts and analysts and fans. But Justin Fields, for instance, he has the physical tools that we quote unquote that can't be taught. His speed is elite. He's a great runner of the football. He has a big arm. He has a cannon of an arm. But we know his red flags, and the red flag is, he doesn't really see the entire field, and he struggles to process information within the pocket. Now, I think we have come to a place where we have put such an emphasis on the traits. And for me, I'm all about the measurables. You know, it's always good to, it's always good when a guy is, you know, when it's easier when a guy has elite traits. But I think we've downplayed how vital it is to have like that mental capacity. But then also we think it's easy. It's like we think it's easily taught. Just with some coaching and time, it's easily taught. And it's not. Because there, I mean, we've seen it countless times. And Kurt Warner kind of, he nailed this point. But how many examples can you give of a quarterback that got into the NFL and was just an average processor or couldn't see the field and then just became this elite processor of information, right? No, it usually does not happen. It usually does not happen like that. You know, now if you flip the other side of the spectrum, there's plenty of quarterbacks that have had average, what we would deem average physical traits, right? Not eye popping, right? But they became great, or they were great because of their ability to process information, go through multiple reads and so forth. And with Fields, we've just have not seen him do that at an effective level. And that's the thing. That is the knock. If you guys remember, that was the knock. That was Kyle Shanahan's concerns. Kyle Shanahan's concerns were, you know, doesn't really see the entire field. Not a great processor of information. That was the thought process. That was Kyle Shanahan's, that was the reason why he wasn't huge on Justin Fields coming out of the draft. And years later, that's the issue, right? That's the issue. And I'm not saying Justin Fields won't be able, he won't be able to develop these skills. No, he very well could. And honestly, I like the combination of Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith is a, you know, didn't do a good job in Atlanta, but he's a good OC. And in Tennessee with the Titans, we watch him reverse the fortunes of Ryan Tannehill's career and resurrect it. We've watched him do that. Now, the offense wasn't built around Ryan Tannehill. It wasn't centered around Ryan Tannehill's, you know, playmaking ability or whatever, right? But it was centered around Derrick Henry. But he had some really good productive years with the Titans. He had some really good productive years. And could this happen with Fields? Yes, it could very well happen. Because Fields, guess what? He, as I pointed to, you know, and as a lot of people are going to allude to, I think that's why a lot of people root for Justin Fields. He has elite traits. The dude's skill set is really, really good. It's really good. But I think as we continue to look at these quarterbacks and judge them and evaluate them, we downplay that mental aspect and certain qualities that you need. And as Kurt Warner pointed out, I think he nailed it. You just don't come into the league as an average or below average processor and just overnight become this great processor of information. You know, it takes time. It takes coaching. And it's not easy. It's not an easy fix, right? It's not an easy fix. So that's the thing with Justin Fields. That's the thing. And with the Steelers, I'm going to give a tip of the cap just based off the fact that they ripped the Band-Aid off. They moved off of Kenny Pickett. It was never going to work. They were literally working with a fringe starting. Kenny Pickett at this point, he's a fringe starter. He's a backup quarterback in the league. And it's not wrong with being a backup. There's plenty of backups that have carved out really good, long-lasting careers. They make a couple million dollars a year. They're really good. You know, it's a really good job. But it was never going to work. And with Fields, you know, from a coaching's perspective, there's a lot more there to work with. You know, from a talent perspective, there is a lot more to work with, right? Where Fields, you know, he has a lot of room of improvement. Like I said, operating in the pocket, which, you know, I'm not sure if it's going to happen, right? But for a six-round pick, if you're just only giving up a six-round pick, why not take a chance on Justin Fields? Why not? Why not? Because rolling with Kenny Pickett in that conference, in the AFC, as I mean, the AFC is just loaded with really good quarterback play, right? And then that division, you have two of the best quarterbacks in football. The result of, you know, continuing to run it back with Kenny Pickett, it was inevitable. So this makes the Steelers really fascinating. It makes them fascinating. But I'm glad that they were able to rip off the Band-Aid and just admit, like, hey, it was not going to work. It was just not going to work with Kenny Pickett as your quarterback. You know, not to say that Justin Fields is going to just be this elite guy, but with his talent, you stand more of a chance. You stand more of a chance from a talent perspective with Kenny Pickett. Because trying to sell the fans, trying to sell yourself that Kenny Pickett is going to be able to go toe-to-toe with Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and Josh, don't even try to fool yourself. Don't even try to convince yourself that that was ever going to work out in your favor, because it wasn't. It was inevitable. The result of that was inevitable. It was the Steelers with Kenny Pickett had a defined ceiling, and it was really good on defense, but we just got to scrape and scrap our way to 17, 20 points every Sunday. That ain't going to work in the AFC. You're going to have to be able to score, and your defense is not going to be able to just shut everybody down. And with, you know, Russell Wilson, not to say, like I said, with Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Russell Wilson is going to be the starter. But in the case that, you know, Russell Wilson may get hurt, whatever, I'm not saying that they're significantly better. But if Russ can duplicate what he did in terms of the numbers, what he did with Denver, with Pittsburgh, they'd be a 10-win team, right? You know, that'd be their ceiling. I feel like 10-win team, playoff team, you know. But I don't see more from that situation. Now, for the Bears, I mean, and Ryan Poles really did Justin Fields a solid. He really did. Right. And I know, like I said, a lot of people are expecting the Bears to get a third rounder, fourth rounder. And people are like, why didn't you wait after the draft? Why didn't you wait until the draft to trade him and so forth and so forth? Sometimes you got to consider like the human element. Right. You got to consider the human element instead of like the risk of better business, quote unquote. Right. And I mean, the Bears already got two top 10 picks. Why mess? You know, Justin Fields was well liked in the locker room. They shipped him off to a place, to an organization that's well ran. And at some point, maybe not this year, but maybe in the years down the road, he'll have a chance to actually compete and win the starting job. If you just trade him to somewhere like Philly or somewhere other place, he was never going to be the starter, right? Right. So instead of a fourth rounder, you get a sixth rounder. Not much of a difference. Not much of a difference when you got two top 10 picks. Now, like I said, with the Bears, they look really good. And I'm gonna move on to Keenan Allen because he got traded to the Bears. So let's move on to that trade. Keenan Allen got traded to the Bears for a fourth round pick. And you know, this trade actually happened before the Justin Fields trade, right? But I had to talk about the Justin Fields trade first. But going into this offseason, the Chargers already knew that they had to make some big-time decisions with some expensive dudes. You know, Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa, Keenan Allen, and Mike Williams. Now, with the defensive guys, Bosa and Mack, that if we work their contracts, you know, restructure their deals and so forth. Mike Williams, they had the cut, right? And there's certain cuts that teams, you know, like when the Bills cut Jordan Poyer, it's not that they cut him. There's a difference between cutting a guy who just can't play and cutting a guy who you want, but they're expensive. Two, they're expensive and, you know, they struggle to stay healthy. And there are certain cuts that you see, like Jordan Poyer. The Bills didn't want to. If the Bills in the perfect world, they would love to keep Jordan Poyer on their team, but they can't. They couldn't. He was too expensive. Way too expensive. And with Mike Williams, the same thing with the Chargers. Mike Williams is a big play receiver, tall. I think he's close. He averages like 15 yards of reception. He's a really, really good player, but struggles to stay healthy and he's expensive, right? So they had to cut him. And so that left Keenan Allen. And they asked him to take a pay cut. He said, no, I'm not doing it. And I understood why the Chargers asked him to take a pay cut. I understand why Keenan Allen said no. He's coming off of his best year of his career statistically. And he's a guy that was going to have a market no matter what happened. Whether he was put on the trading block or if the Chargers just flat out cut him. Now, coming into this, the Chargers, they had a tough cap situation. So when, you know, in this case, you know, they traded, they moved the receivers, and I think people like, man, what are the Chargers doing? They have no receivers. But you got to think about it, guys. When it comes to thinking about it with Jim Harbaugh, it's not shocking that he valued the two defensive linemen more than the receivers. Because with Harbaugh, look at his 49er teams, you know, his Michigan teams. You look at his track record. Granted, he's a former quarterback, but if you look at how his teams play and how his teams are usually built, you wouldn't be able to tell because he's wired like a defensive coordinator. Like he's wired like a defensive guy, right? You wouldn't think quarterback because when you think former quarterbacks, you think of offensive minded. You know, throwing the football around the field, having, you know, the best skilled guys, right? When you think of former quarterbacks, Steve Sarkisian and, you know, Ryan Day, these guys, high-flying offenses, they want the best quarterbacks, they want the receivers and so forth. That's not Harbaugh. Harbaugh has always been wired kind of like a offensive line coach or a defensive minded coach, right? That's what he prioritizes. And Khalil Mack, I mean, he had a really good year last year. He had 17 sacks. But more importantly, he's played every game in the last 2 years. Now, Joey Bosa, really good player, but he's struggled to stay healthy since signing his new deal. He's had a hard time staying on the field and staying healthy, but he still plays a valuable position. And like I said, Harbaugh prioritized that. So the Chargers, they were in a lose-lose situation, and they knew coming into the offseason that this was a very likely outcome and possibility. Now, from the Bears' perspective, they are in an incredible spot. For a team that's drafting number one in the draft, they are in an incredible spot. And like I said, the cat's out the bag. They're going to draft Caleb Williams. This is a really ideal spot for a rookie quarterback, right? And I always talk about how where you land matters. Where you land, it just matters. It matters. I mean, for instance, usually when you're the number one pick in the draft, you're going to the worst team essentially in the league. So, you know, coach is probably on the hot seat. You have no talent, right? Like, your team is just atrocious. You're devoid of talent. You're usually probably the best player on the team if you're the number one pick. Usually, typically, that's usually how it works. This situation right here, the Bears have made it really, really ideal. And, you know, I think like Joe Burrow, I mean, when he got drafted to Cincy, it was a shit show. I mean, granted, he had some players like Tyler Boyd. They also drafted T. Higgins in that draft. But overall, that team was bad. Like, bad offensive line. Like, that team was just not talented. And there's countless examples of number one picks, you know, going places and the teams are atrocious, right? Look no further than Bryce Young, you know, last year in Carolina, where he gets drafted to a shit show, like bad management, bad front office, and then like no support, like the supporting cast offensively just left a lot to be desired. So where you land, I always talk about this, but where you land matters. It just matters. And when you look at the Bears offense, the potential, like, first you add Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen is as consistent as they come over the past seven, 8 years. Keenan Allen's been one of the more consistent receivers. Not necessarily like, you know, when you're listing who's your top two, top three receivers, Keenan Allen probably isn't a name that many throw out there, but he's just straight line. If he plays 15 to 16, 17 games, he's an 80 to 100 catch type of guy. Great route runner, runs like a 5-3-4, but seamlessly is always open. And those type of receivers are a young quarterback's best friend. They're a young quarterback's best friend. But so that's what you're getting in the Bears. And I mean, relatively, given, you know, you only give up a fourth, he's pretty expensive, but he's on an expiring deal, right? And looking at the Bears offense, I mean, you get DJ Moore, another high-end receiver who is really versatile. Solid tight end and Cole Kmet. As I mentioned, you have Keenan Allen, who he's like a route running merchant, right? And he's gonna be Caleb Williams' best friend. Trust me, he's that type of receiver. He's your young quarterback's best friend. They had a solid running game last year, and you know they added DeAndre Swift to that mix. And granted, I don't totally agree with the amount that they paid him, but he's solid. And then they have an improved offensive line. And even if you want to take it a step further and look at the defensive side, you know, they traded and paid Montez Sweat. And like similar to DeAndre Swift, I like Montez Sweat. I think he's a really good player. I think they overpaid. I didn't think they had to give up draft capital in order to sign him. I think they would have been able to throw the bag at him anyway. In free agency, but you know, he had a great impact on the defense in the second half of the year. And you know, they played well. They were able to keep Jalen Johnson, their star corner. And they added guys like Kevin Byard in the secondary. So the Bears are definitely going to be fascinating. And if Caleb is as good as I think he is, and if he's like relatively close to that in his rookie year, the Bears, I see no reason why they can't win 8 or 9 games, right? Like, just based off the fact, like, their offense is going to be potent. It has the makings and the potential to be really, really good, even with a rookie quarterback, Caleb Williams. I think with Caleb's unique ability, but also you mix in his pocket presence and his processing, the Bears are really fascinating, and Bears fans should be excited. So you got to give a tip of the cap to Ryan Poles as well. Ryan Poles, the mere fact that he's been able to build this type of ideal situation for a quarterback, a rookie quarterback. And I know people are like, well, he didn't do that for Justin Fields. Justin Fields had DJ Moore, right? Justin Fields had a pretty good defense last year. You know, they had a pretty good running game as well. Let's not make it seem like, oh, the Bears just didn't do shit for Justin Fields. No, they're not going to be as good as they are, as they could be next year, right, potentially. But they tried to put some pieces and make some things happen around him. But regardless, Ryan Poles, after the Chase Claypool trade, and he gave up that second round pick, which ended up being Tracy Porter Jr., seems like a pretty good player. A lot of the fans started to really, you know, scratch their head and wonder, what the hell is this guy doing? What is he doing? Has no idea what he's doing. But I must admit, these last few transactions, these trades that he's been pulling, you know, it's panned out really well for them. It's panned out really, really well for the Bears. So, I'm not going to call him boy genius, right? But I'm not going to make it seem like he is Bill Polian or like some great GM, but he has done a pretty good job. He has done a pretty good job. And like I said, if Caleb, I know a lot of people are high on Caleb, and I've been talking about Caleb for such a long time. Even you guys don't even know the half of it. But I think Caleb's going to be pretty good. And even if he's a rookie quarterback. So I'm not saying, when I say good, I mean like, could he be a top 12, 13 quarterback as a rookie? I think that's really possible. I think that's really possible, and with the offensive supporting cast that he has, it makes his chances a lot greater. So if they get that type of play from Caleb, where he is a top 12-ish quarterback, they should win games, but also that increases the pressure on Matt Eberflus. So, you know, Bears are really interesting. I think that whole entire division is really interesting, with Detroit, Green Bay, Chicago, Minnesota. I think that whole entire division is pretty interesting to watch and keep an eye on. So we'll see what they do. But Keenan Allen to the Bears, huge, huge trade. Huge trade, big pickup for the Bears. And they only gave away a fourth. And like I said, with the Chargers, it was a lose-lose situation. They knew they weren't going to keep him or be able to keep – they knew they would have to cut bait with someone. It turns out it was just their two receivers. But I don't think he made the wrong decision. I think he made the right decision by not taking the pay cut, because either they were going to cut him and, you know, teams would be able to negotiate their own deal, or they trade him, which they did. And – the Bears, you know, they had enough cap flexibility to take on his money for 1 year. And like I said, he's on an expiring deal. So they only gave up a fourth. I don't think that's bad. I think that's pretty good. I think that was a pretty good deal. So we'll see how the Bears do. We'll see how the Chargers fare with filling that receiver gap on their depth chart. Some other news coming this weekend, kind of made me sad a little bit, but not surprised at the same time. And it was Aaron Donald, you know, announcing his retirement. And as I said, I'm not really surprised, because he's been hinting at this for the past couple of years. So I'm not surprised, but Aaron Donald, I mean, in terms of his legacy, it's obvious he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. When he's eligible, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's just no matter what, right? Like, first ballot type of guy. And, you know, 10 Pro Bowls, 8 All-Pros, obviously a Super Bowl champ. And he won 3 Defensive Player of the Years. You could probably make an argument that, you know, he probably should have like four or five of those Defensive Player of the Year awards, but he is, I think, without a doubt, the greatest defensive player of his generation, right? I don't even think it is a debate. I think he's the greatest defensive player of his generation. And he has a really damn good argument for being the best defensive player ever. He's in that type of conversation. When you talk about greatest defensive players, obviously Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White, Deion Sanders, usually those are the names that's thrown out when you talk about all-time great defensive players and who's the greatest defensive player. Aaron Donald is right in that rarefied class and air. He's right in the midst of that discussion. I mean, just a dominant force. And honestly, for the position that he played, he was relatively small. I know some people are like, he's 6'1 and 280 pounds. How's he small? But for like a defensive tackle for a three technique, he was on the smaller side of things. And not highly recruited out of high school. Obviously went to Pitt, and the moment he came into the NFL, he's just been dominant. And granted, over the last 2 years or so, he wasn't as elite as he once was, but still really good. Don't get him mistaken. Still a really good player, but you could see he just wasn't in the midst of his prime. But in his prime, at his peak, he was as good as anyone at that position ever. And he was ultimately the best defensive player. Arguably, there were some times where people would make the argument that he was the best player in football, right? So that is the type of dominance you think of Aaron Donald. Obviously, like I said, not surprising, because after he had won the Super Bowl, a lot of people thought he would retire. The year the Rams won the Super Bowl, a lot of people thought that, he was going to retire and so forth. That was essentially the only thing that he was missing on his resume, was a Super Bowl championship, and he got it. So, a couple years later, not surprised that he retired, still relatively young at 32, but he played 10 NFL seasons. Yeah, Aaron Donald is as good as it gets. For my buck, I wasn't alive to see Reggie White or Deion Sanders in his prime. But in terms of defensive players, this is probably the best guy that I have seen with my two eyes, right? Wasn't born for Lawrence Taylor, but this is probably the guy. And he's in that class. He is definitely in that class. Now, it's a hard blow for the Rams. I usually know and understand this cap stuff and situation, but I'm not sure how his cap situation would work with the Rams. I'm not sure. But huge blow for the Rams, because when you think about the team that they had last year, a lot of people, including myself, did not think the Rams would be a playoff team. And for my reasons were, hey, simply, they started the season off with no Cooper Kupp, right? Their defense was awfully really, really young. And, they played a lot of young guys. They had one of the youngest defenses in the league, and Aaron Donald, right? And so I just wasn't sure about the defense. And then more important, I wasn't sure if Matthew Stafford was going to play all 17 games. I just wasn't sure. But the Rams, they found a guy. They found another really good receiver in Puka Nacua. Stafford, for the most part, was healthy. And he was, and not only was he healthy, he was playing really, really well. And turns out the Rams, they turned out to be one of those teams that everybody was kind of down on. And they pooped out 9 wins. They got to the playoffs, and they play in a tightly, close game with the Detroit Lions, who end up eventually going to the NFC Championship game. So, I mean, not a bad way to go out, but like I said, bad blow for the Rams because they had such a young defense last year, and they're going to have a young defense this year. And Aaron Donald was, you know, not a vocal guy, but I would imagine he showed some form of leadership, I would imagine. So, huge blow for the Rams with Aaron Donald retiring. What else do we have on the docket? I know I received some questions about free agency. I know I also received some questions about college football. I don't want to mash all of that in together. I will answer some of you guys' free agency questions or comments. But I will, like I said, I will do college football separately because I got a college football. We got some things to cover in college football as well. So I won't go too crazy into that. So I answer a couple of comments and questions that you guys have left about free agency. We have so this is the first one. Who is this from? This is from, I was debating whether or not should I say you guys' names. I don't know if you guys care or not. I mean, it's public. You made a comment on Spotify, so everybody else can see your name. I don't know. But this guy says, hey, been a listener of the pod for a minute. You're usually critical of the Patriots' offensive scouting, but why haven't they gone after T. Higgins yet? Great question. And I have. I mean, over the past several years, if you say you've been listening for a minute, thank you. Greatly appreciate that. But yeah, you're right. I have been critical of the Patriots drafting of skill guys. Like when I talk about when I say offensive, or I would assume when you say offensive scouting, I would assume you're talking about, you know, the guys that they have attempted to either draft or sign at the skill positions. I would assume that's what you're talking about. And yeah, I have been critical. I mean, Devontae Parker, I've seen some advanced stats. He is dead last in terms of creating separation in the league. And guess what? He wasn't only dead last for this year, but he's been dead last in that category for over the past several seasons. And this is literally a Patriots receiver. So yeah, some of this was Bill, Belichick. He has his way, and I always push back, like, hey, I'm like, man, Bill Belichick, he's a great coach and all, he's one of the greatest to do it, but he just has no feel for offense. So I with the Patriots not signing any, you know, they did try to go after Calvin Ridley. I think they tried to go after Gabe Davis. I think it was Gabe Davis. It was either Calvin Ridley or Dave Davis. I don't know. But they tried to go after some guys in free agency. You know, they got outbidded and, you know, they didn't get no one, right? They didn't get no one. And I think T. Higgins, you know, I don't, maybe you follow my Twitter or whatever, but I tweeted out, I'm like, hey, if I'm the Patriots, I get on the phone and I call Cincinnati and I say, hey, I give you my 34th pick, second round, 34 overall pick for T. Higgins. Easy. I mean, easy. And maybe at some point they will do that as we get closer to the draft. I'm not going to discount it. Like, it's not going to happen. But, I mean, T. Higgins would by far be the best receiver just talent-wise, from a talent perspective. He would be the best receiver that they have had in a very, very, very long time, just from a talent perspective. He'd be the best. So, I mean, he's an option. Mike Williams is on the market as a free agent. He's really good. He's an option, right? The only knock on him, or, you know, the gist of that is Kansas City stay healthy. But yes, I have been critical of the Patriots, and rightfully so. I mean, that's even with Bill, his defenses always were on par. But ever since Tom left, they just have not been able to figure out the offensive thing. And even when Tom was there, though, that those last few years, it was hard. And that's why Tom just, like, come on, give me some help here. But yes, thank you. Great question. Hopefully the Patriots make that move. You know, now they have Gerard Mayo at the helm. So, you know, no longer Belichick drafting. We'll see if they can break some of this, these drafting curse in terms of their offensive skill guys. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. Great question. Steelers. This guy says Steelers quarterback room looking crazy now. Is Justin Fields a long-term option? Well, hopefully you're listening to this episode. You would have, I kind of talked about this a little bit, but could he be the Steelers' long-term option? Yes, I think he could be. As I mentioned, he does have some traits. He has some special, unique traits and abilities that's like really eye-popping, and that's like, okay, we can work through this. Now, as I said, the pocket issues, his red, Justin Fields' red flags aren't just easily solvable or curable, right? So he could be the Steelers' long-term option, right? I bet the Steelers are hoping that it pans out that he's their long-term option because he has some of these elite traits in that division and in that conference. You gotta have someone under center that's talented. And Justin, his talent can't be questioned, but the mental aspect of it and, you know, being able to see the field and, you know, interpreting and processing information, he's just struggled with it. Pocket presence, he's just struggled with it, right? So I bet the Steelers are hoping that he can fix and fine-tune those things. Because if he does, then you can topple that with that elite skill set and these traits, you know, big arm, fat, you know, the athleticism that can just all be mixed in. And, you know, you have your quarterback. So great question. Great comment. What else do we have? Isaiah always bring great analysis and detail with takes, but why haven't the Cowboys made a move yet? Well, they have no cap room. like the Cowboys, if the Cowboys had, I feel like this is some of the issue, like this is some of the issues that a lot of people run into with the Cowboys on a consistent basis during the offseason. Why aren't they signing anybody, whatever? And if the Cowboys had $50-60 million in cap space, they would easily be able to sign players easily. But the thing is with the Cowboys, kind of a blessing and a curse. They, over the past several years, over the past really decade, they have drafted really, really well. So when you draft well, you end up extending your own guys. And with the Cowboys, that's just been the case. They have extended a lot of their players. And Jerry loves, like, you know, like, for instance, Zeke. Jerry loved Zeke. And he extended Zeke a little too early, a little too soon. He gave him the contract extension, and the ink wasn't even dry. And he ultimately regretted that decision, right? That it put the Cowboys behind the eight ball financially. So, you know, I know a lot of people like, man, the Cowboys aren't making any moves. It's kind of hard to make some moves when you know, your money and financials all tied up. And they do have, I'm not saying they don't have cap space or cap room, but it's really limited. They're working with a limited budget. And like I said, when you know, kind of a blessing and a curse, because they have been able to draft really well. And with them drafting well, they extend a lot of their players. They re-sign a lot of their players before they even hit the market. You know, they re-sign Dak, they re-sign Zeke, they re-sign, you know, Zach Martin, you know, they re-sign DeMarcus Lawrence. They, you know, they're going to extend Micah Parsons at some point. They extended already Trayvon Diggs. So they draft and they do a lot of in-house stuff. And, you know, but I'm sure with the state taxes, they would be a huge player in free agency if they had the money. Some of these comments are like duplicates. I can go down to the other episode. Let's see. This is a good question. Isaiah, this is Sports Junkie DMV. I'm sorry, I called your name out. But he says, Isaiah, how can the Commanders turn the page with new ownership and be competitive? This is a good question. The Commanders, the way they can turn the page. Well, I thought it was really eye-opening with how they conducted their hiring search of Dan Quinn, of their new coach, right? I thought that was really interesting. They had Bob Myers, you know, they had a lot of facilitators, a lot of hands, a lot of chefs in the kitchen when it came to making a decision on their new head coach. And they had some pretty smart, reliable people, you know, Rich Kleiman and so forth. So they hired Dan Quinn. And I know a lot of people are like, the Dan Quinn hire kind of feels like Ron Rivera all over again. And I get why you say that. But like I said, I did an episode on the Dan Quinn hire. Dan Quinn, if he can just make this team respectable again, it's a win. And that's what you said. Like, how can they turn the page with new ownership and be competitive? If he can just make them competitive, not win them a Super Bowl, get back to the NFC champ, but if he can just make them competitive and give the fans just a little glimmer of hope, and if they can, you know, be a wild card team, that would be huge. Now, the makings of that is, first, you know, they've made some big time moves in free agency. They've been a big time spender, right? They've also added Austin Ekeler. They've added several of the Cowboy players, they're grabbing from the Cowboys personnel and so forth. And, you know, we'll see what they do at the quarterback spot in the draft. They traded away Sam Howell, right? But Washington, their roster it's not necessarily a bad roster. They got some really good pieces at some really important spots. So it's all depending on what they do at the now that we're past free agency, or we're looking ahead of the draft, the quarterback spot. If they hit on the quarterback, they have a chance to be really competitive and be decent, right? That's the thought process. So, great question. I'm gonna wrap it up right here. A lot of these comments are concerning college football and so forth. So, I will I'll catch you guys on the flip side. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Always remember, two choices, one decision. Your boy is out. Peace, deuces. I will make sure that I dedicate another episode to answering the rest of these questions and comments that you guys may have. But I'm out. Peace, deuces.